We're going to be doing some analysis here with Ion about cold fusion today. Yesterday, I interviewed David Cobb, the presidential candidate for the Green Party, who is officially given a word that he's going to support cold fusion, and he's going to have it in part of his political process. So today, this is Michael McCubra. I interviewed him on June 1st, talking some of the technical things regarding cold fusion.
Intro, you had Elizabeth Shue, and I'm not any Elizabeth Shue, and I'm certainly not as excited as she sounded then, but she said that it can't be replicated. That's an interesting phrase, can't be replicated. This effect certainly can be replicated and has been replicated many times. The issue is, cannot be replicated in every experiment. And the question is, why not? We're not talking about magic here. If you do the same things, you get the same results. The question is, what is it in your procedure that is not consistent from one experiment to the next? So my group at SRI spent a lot of time trying to understand the electrochemical issues that relate to loading deuterium into palladium. And then when we thought we'd mastered or mostly mastered that, we started to look at the metallurgical issues relating to the palladium electrode itself, which either facilitates or inhibits loading. In order to produce the effect, you need to load deuterium, heavy hydrogen, into palladium to a very high level. You have to fill up essentially all of the lattice sites, the holes inside the palladium lattice, which just fit a hydrogen or deuterium atom. You've got to fill them all up. At least 90% of them have to be filled with deuterium. You need to maintain that loading for a long period of time. You need to have some sort of flux, some sort of motion. You have to put those deuterium atoms into motion. And then you need some sort of trigger. The electrochemistry can provide a trigger. You can also use acoustic effects, ultrasonics, or lasers and other means of triggering. So if you do all of those things, you will see the effect. And after about 10 years of work, we had defined the parameter space, you know, the things that you needed to do in order to achieve the effect. The nice thing about that is we can explain our failures. You know, when we don't get the effect, it's because we failed to meet one or other of those criteria. Now we can start working on ways to more rigorously control the loading, the metallurgy of the palladium. I've been working very closely with the Italian Nuclear Agency. In fact, it's a combination of DOE and EPA. It's called ENEA. Group that I work with is in Frascati, just outside of Rome, and a very good metallurgist, a good friend of mine, Dr. Vittorio Violante, has pretty much mastered the control of the palladium metallurgy so that you can reproducibly make palladium electrodes that can be loaded, that don't crack, that don't form surface defects, that will allow us to load to high levels and get some sort of motion of deuterium, some fluxing going on. So without good palladium, you're dead.
You started off talking about the relationship between deuterium and palladium. What would you add to that or accept from what he said?
What he's missing is the isotope for the enriched palladium that he's trying to get to, he missed.
And why is he missing it?
Because he doesn't know that isotope of platinum, of palladium, is. It would be an aggregate between platinum and palladium, but they both have the same number. What's that 197 number that's so magical?
That's the number for the isotope, Carol?
One of them.
Well,
so
one of them.
You're saying palladium and platinum are similar, close?
Palladium comes from platinum. What he's missing is the iridium, but that's what he's trying to find some inference or reference regarding so that his wordy words could make some logical progression of sense.
Are you going to be guarded in what you say because you don't want to give it all away to the other people?
We're only going to answer questions that are asked.
You said palladium, platinum. They're both 197.
So is gold and so is iridium. Carolyn, tell him what the 197 is.
Is it molecular weight or mass or number?
Number.
Number, molecular number. What happens is when you dance around between isotopes and change their molecular number, then they can all of a sudden jump into another space.
That's correct. because you're limiting it from what you are able to identify to see. So that's the query that was trying to be confoundedly laid out here with playing between iridium, palladium, and platinum, and which element that would make cold fusion applicably work.
And 197 is the designation for the space they jump into, Carolyn? You said they...
I don't know that.
Yeah, okay, so Carol gave her answer. The number 197 does not refer to a sequence that there's 197 elements. That's not what...
No, because there's only so far, I'm looking up a periodic table, 118 elements, but they keep finding more and more and more.
So the 197...
The isotopes thereof.
And, yeah.
So the 197, what is it referring to? It's just the designation of a space?
Mm-hmm. For a mass, atomic mass.
Iridium, gold, platinum, palladium have similar mass.
In their isotopic form.
In their isotopic form, which is what you're talking about here, is it not? They were just using plain palladium or plain platinum. You wouldn't be having this conversation. Everybody would have a cold fusion dispensary in their garage.
The isotopic factor complicates it.
Complicated, it simplifies it so you don't end up making a hydrogen bomb.
Right. I mean, it's what you need to do, but complicates in terms of if you're a scientist and you just look at the periodic table with blinders on and think, well, that's what I have to work with, and don't realize, I think I've read that they're over 3,000 isotopes that have been found, and that's only because somebody kind of looked for them.
Right.
So there are known isotopes for those four elements.
Oh, yeah.
There are, like, remember, Carol, we were talking about isotopes the other day, and, like, Ion was saying there's more than known, so to speak. But they do know about those, because you said you associated isotopes with nuclear radiation or something.
Yeah, I had always been under the impression that an isotope was a radioactive particle. Come to find out, we got into a discussion, Ion and I, about the isotopes for metals are kind of equivalent to how we have other bodies, our doubles. Everything's doubled and tripled and on and on.
Michael McCluber did not mention isotopes in that little excerpt, did he?
No.
Ion, you're saying they need to consider the isotope factor to get a better alchemy.
Oh, no. Because if they consider that, they may actually get somewhere.
If they actually accepted what we're saying and realized, eureka, we can do it, their own personal resistance to whether arriving at the end of the research comes in.
Well, they can wait for 30 or 40 years to see if science can disprove it or not.
Somebody on the monitors, mentor, location, Aresia, as usual, Ion is wrong. The terms you're looking for is atomic weight and atomic number.
They're different. The isotope is affecting the atomic mass, and the only way they can give that is to adjust from the isotope the number. So, yes, that's exactly correct, and it's the difference between, and good, you figured it out. Now, why don't you have Coldplay?
You know, it's just three terms that science throws around. The atomic mass is the mass of a specific isotope of a given atom, most often expressed in unified atomic mass units. It's considered to be the total mass of protons, neutrons, and electrons. The atomic mass is sometimes incorrectly used as a synonym of relative atomic mass, atomic weight, etc. So, you know, it's all kind of mixed up where the definitions kind of dance around, and how do we even know what is true?
So you got atomic weight and atomic number, Carol. Even though it's vague and mixed up, what does atomic weight refer to as opposed to atomic number?
They talk about synonyms of relative atomic mass. See, when they start saying relative atomic mass, it means they're measuring things, and it's not quite the atomic mass they had the day before, and they don't know what that means, and they're not factoring in the isotope factor, which is the main point where Ion's bringing up here.
What degree of the half-life that they're gauging when they looked at it today and what the new half-life is, and then its molecular weight or mass index in comparison to its volume. So that's the atomic number and the atomic weight and then the atomic mass. And when you start playing in the world of isotopes, you have to get something stable to gauge it by instead of the relative ethereal, it once upon a midnight dreary was, in order to have a significant gauge to qualify exactly which palladium you are interested in procuring consistently.
Mm-hmm. The wiki says standard atomic weight refers to the mean relative atomic mass of an element. So the mean relative atomic mass has to factor in the isotopes coming and going and half-lifing themselves to death. So it is going to be different, but it's almost like when you give a definition of one of these things, you have to go into the isotopes, and people don't have time to be bothered to go into the details.
Therefore, it becomes an abomination.
Mentor responds, the words atomic and molecular are not interchangeable.
Well, good. They're not interchangeable, but your science does all day, every day. So you are correct, and yet they do.
Right, the molecular number, the number of photons, is different from the weight and mass. So those are...
They change.
Right.
When they change, then they interchange the words. And, Mentor, you're absolutely correct. There is a complete delineation, or was originally when you added a name to it the first time. But now, all of a sudden, it's kind of gone into the gray area, and it sort of waxes and wanes a bit. So give it 30 minutes, and it'll change again. So this is the simple, easy conjecture of, do you want cold fusion or not? And if you do, then how to do it, and does it work? Some people are so concerned about being right that they escape happy or the desires that they're trying to manifest into their reality. So what we're saying is that if science was so smart, why ain't they figured it out yet?
Well, they're too busy trying to argue about the definitions. Looking at molecular mass, it says molecular mass of a substance is the mass of one molecule of that substance in unified atomic mass units equal to 1/12 the mass of one atom of the isotope of carbon-12.
Everything's based on carbon-12 only. That's the only one they can keep stable for a minute.
So it's a definition within a definition that then if you don't adhere to, your paper will be ignored in the science.
Right.
You're saying in daily practice, it's more nebulous.
Well, exactly. Would you rather have cold fusion or a paper regarding cold fusion?
Ruby, up in Eureka, she says the atomic number is the number of protons in any element, which is the same as the number of electrons.
If it's balanced. Because if it's not balanced, then you go into the isotope scale, which is what Carolyn kindly was just trying to offer.
Yeah, so the isotopes were discovered...
That means before that they were not. That recent new discovery is what you're judging all elemental science that has been thoroughly established. I guess that's how they figured out that the world indeed was more than flat.
The isotopic factor, it complicates these simple definitions.
You just got through saying they're not simple. So, which is it? They can be. You can have it very simple and just identify the individual radioisotope of palladium, apply it to cold fusion, and then it works. And then you don't have anything to bitch about anymore.
The isotope confused the understanding of the element?
The isotope...
Confused the understanding of...
The isotopes don't change the atomic number. It's the atomic mass that's changed. With an isotope, so I guess...
That affects the molecular strata. Otherwise, it wouldn't be known as an isotope. So you've got an ipso facto dynamic that you can spend the rest of eternity, but you won't be any closer than you were when you started this program.
So you're saying, in referring to what Michael McGoober said, that he's not considering the isotopic factor when he talks about palladium and deuterium?
Right.
And you're saying it would be wise to do that?
But you won't have anything to tweet about.
Because they'll be successful?
No, they'll just still be talking about it because they haven't even got to the iridium component.
Did he mention iridium?
No, he had now.
No, he didn't.
Ion, this is the first time heard that iridium is a factor in making cold fusion. Is that what you're suggesting, Ion?
An isotope of it, but it wouldn't be very different than platinum or palladium because when you look at them from their isotope 197, they're not so very different. I guess we need to clear this up, okay? Iridium was discovered in 1803, and what it is a residue left when crude platinum is dissolved by aqua regina. The name iridium is appropriate because its salts are highly colored, okay? And it has an atomic number of 77. And it has an atomic weight of 192.22, okay? And its electron configuration would be 6s2 4f14 5d7. Now, it's interesting because its melting point is 2446 centigrade, but its boiling point is 4428 centigrade. So when you start playing in that, when you start using that as your position, then you become the isotope version at the 197, something magical happens because you'll see an adjusting of the specific gravity of iridium.
There are at least 32 isomers for iridium, ranging in mass number from 164 to 197.
Is that in the realm of what Ian just said?
We said its atomic weight was 192.22.
That's the most stable isotope, is the 192.
That's the most stable version of iridium, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a good lead-in to the next clip I want to play about Cooper. This is him commenting on what happened in the lab in Israel. Because apparently when the 60 Minutes piece was being put together, part of the reason why they wanted to do it in the first place is because the lab in Israel had more success than any other thing that's been done before. And I'm going to play this piece now about him talking about that, and then Ian can comment about what they did versus over there versus what the other guys are doing. So here we go. In the 60 Minutes piece, they could have chosen any lab. Did they ask you, okay, Dr. McCooper, light it up, let's see it work? Is that part of it when they were putting this story together, or did they want to go over to the lab? I think it was an Israeli lab that they showed. They could have gone to any lab. Why did they choose that one?
I think one of the things that inspired 60 Minutes piece, and it's been forgotten, and has the lessons of this really need to be properly learned. The reason that 60 Minutes was interested wasn't me, and it wasn't Vittorio Violante at Enea. It was Energetics, and there's a firm in New Jersey who, headed by a scientist, actually a medical doctor, Irving Dardick, who developed this idea of a superwave, a very complicated, modulated electrochemical waveform, which happens to have the ability to both load deuterium into palladium to very high levels and modulate it. And the research effort that was set up by Energetics in Oma, Israel, that I've visited there now three times, and a very capable bunch of scientists and engineers who had produced a stunning result of cold fusion heat production. They'd produced 25 times more heat from the superwave electrolysis than was going in electrically. So just think about that for a moment. Imagine you had an electric heater in your home. It could boil your water for 1/25th of the electricity cost. That is essentially a product right there. So that's what triggered the 60 Minutes interest. And as they started to pursue it, they focused on the lab in Israel and the work at SRI and Energetics, this New Jersey company, had already formed a collaboration, an ongoing collaboration with Energetics, with MIT, and with NRL, Naval Research Lab in Washington, all working on the same project topic. And that was what it was that had precipitated the invigorated interest from CBS that led to the 60 Minutes piece. But I don't know whether it's my pretty face or talking voice, but somehow the CBS focus of their attention turned more to me and away from Energetics, which slightly irritated my friends at Energetics, I must say. But it was we should remember that CBS was triggered by a near practical demonstration of a real heat effect, which cannot be explained by anything except a nuclear process. So,
okay, so what happened at Energetics? What's going on in that lab that nobody else has done that they've picked up on, and which has inspired the 60 Minutes piece, Ion?
Apparently, they've come up with a real efficient hot water boiler. And the question at hand is, what in the world does that have to do with cold fusion? They had an example that practically almost should have, but didn't work.
We released a tape explaining how to do it, if you were a scientist and had the materials to work with.
And or had followed up and asked another question or two, if it was your intention as a marvelous human creator to evoke this manifested creation. Now, of course, Ion is just an unstable woo-woo somewhere out there. But here's what the best thing is we're not confounded by it. But it doesn't make any difference to us. We're good either way. But if you're interested in it and you want to know how to do it, you can eliminate many, 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 many of those possibilities by simply getting into the process and asking specific questions. It's amazing. And Bob can toot our horn. We don't have to toot our horn. Of the folks that have engaged and get on a specific point, get interested in it, start finding out dynamics regarding it, and then they have specific questions regarding what they're working on. Then the next thing you know, they can move the S&P 500. They can have more water than you can imagine that's very delicious for you to drink. And every other dynamic that you can think of under the sun, and they're not bound up or tangled up by what science and the science community says you can't do. If you don't know as marvelous human creators what you can't do, we're not so sure you're ready for cold fusion.
When Bob and I did the cold fusion tape with Ion, we're not physicists. We didn't have all the questions to be asked because it's a process. Ion is not going to give you answers to something that you haven't asked about.
People have got a house full of electricity running through their house right now, and they're in the grid and bitching about it, and rah, 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 rah. Wonderful, 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 and they still don't even know what electricity is. They would tell you how it works, but they can't even tell you what it is.
Do you need to know what it is?
No, but science does. They have to be able to prove that it isn't so they can tell you that it is. And the only reason you have electricity, citizenry, is because science can't disprove it. If they could, it would have already been eliminated from your capacity.
Why is Michael McCooper not saying anything in the clip that I just played?
Apparently, he's more communicating why 60 Minutes didn't give the full flushing effect of what this company and their hot water heater business was trying to work on more than the dynamics of cold fusion. So if they'd have talked about it from the standpoint of we've got a really cool hot water heater, maybe it would have been all the rage. But it's kind of like saying, I have a new process for making soft-boiled eggs. Oh, and by the way, it has total and complete control of the weather. And 60 Minutes did a big expose on it, and they were really amazed that the chickens lay soft-boiled eggs. But we were trying to get to how it controlled the weather.
You're saying it got diverted from the aspect of cold fusion being so amazing to what happened on 60 Minutes. That became the news.
Apparently.
That became more important than the cold fusion.
That was what was spoke about. That's what was spoke about.
Right, right.
And if those scientists in Israel have come up with a way to make a great boiler, a hot water heater, great. Everybody can have plenty of hot water. Okay.
Well, James, you were asking him why did they choose the Israeli lab. Did he ever answer that?
The excess hit was more than any other lab had ever created before. A lot of labs had not achieved what that lab had done. They were saying because it was the quality of the palladium. The palladium structure was somehow different that made that happen.
You're suggesting that the heat reaction they got has nothing to do with making actual cold fusion.
That's correct.
What were they creating then besides just the
heat.
Temperature?
Hot water.
Water. And what mechanism were they creating that from?
A big lab.
So the people who knocked the cold fusion debate or even knocked McCooper, they're probably right because they could logically say just because you get some heat, what's that got to do with making a whole city run on free energy?
Then they come back and say, but you've ignored the fact that we have perfected the soft-boiled egg.
Don't you have to start somewhere? Don't you have to start with a few degrees?
Yes, 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 and that's right. And if you're going to do it the way you've been doing it, then we would kind of follow up and say, and how's that been working for you? then we would say, great, so line up every different element, even those you haven't bothered to figure out yet, but you're so smart getting the definitions, it shouldn't be trouble. You'll be able to figure it out soon enough. Of everything that is that you don't know that is, and figure what is, and then try that and send it all to Israel. Let them run it through their lab, and everything that doesn't boil water really, really good will be eliminated. And when you get it down, you can perfect the perfect boiler. That has nothing to do with cold fusion. Nothing that's been said so far even has the Coptic vision that's even alluding to cold fusion.
So you would agree with the Pentagon's objection to that cold fusion 60-minute show, and 60 minutes was forced to put a qualifier in there. Any mention of cold fusion in relation to what MacGruber and the Israelis talked about is not a fact, not connected, and you would agree with the Pentagon's objection, right, Ion?
Absolutely. It's correct.
The Student's Guide for Cold Fusion, Chapter 4, Descriptions of the Nuclear Active Environment. It says, a number of observations placed the nuclear active environment in the surface region of a Pons-Fleischmann cathode. These are, 1, almost complete loss of helium to the gas, appearance of tritium in the electrolyte rather than an evolving gas, there's that heat, observed heat generated on the surface, transmutation products located only in the surface region, presence of melted regions on the surface, and 6, ability to generate a large effect using thin deposits on an inert substrate. Then the guide says, many careful analyses of such surfaces reveal a complex alloy containing lithium, platinum, elements provided by the Pyrex container, and impurities in the electrolyte with much less or no palladium. All that I've read, Ion, does it have any relevance to the cold fusion you see happening?
No, it has more to do with the effects of chemotherapy on the body. And you can find that in the Chemotherapy for Dummies guide at Amazon.com.
What threw me there is that Pons and Fleischmann were chemists, and they invaded the sacred ground of the physicists when they announced the cold fusion. The physicists, these guys are not qualified. They're just dumb chemists.
Oh, I see.
And so there's a pun there by Ion about chemotherapy. So there's a very deep pun there that I picked up.
Oh, very good.
We're just half-baked, Bob. Don't put credible relevance on us.
All right.
That's how we said relevance.
Yeah, reel it back.
Yeah.
Okay, so isn't why do they think this has something to do with their vision of coal, of the free
we
energy?
We have no idea.
Well, James, if you take Ion seriously, tell Ruby to take down the site. We're on no way towards coal fusion.
If you're going down that rabbit hole, no, you can't get there from now.
All right, can you tell us what they, well, you have told us what they should look at.
Honestly. I have told you.
I want to go to this paragraph. In addition, measurements of the surface composition places above D over PD equals 1.5, as can be seen in Figure 1, and perhaps as high as D over PD equals 2. As argued by Edmund Storms, who James has had on the show, the nuclear active environment is not pure. I can't read that the chemical thing. In an electrolytic, you can see it, Ion. You can see what I'm looking at. It's not pure blah, blah, blah. An electrolytic cell, nor may this phase be involved at all. At the very least, the material contains a much higher deuterium content than previously thought, which allows for the presence of deuterium dimers. Do you agree with that?
Yes, because what you're going to end up with is a hydrogen bomb, and that's what he's trying to say. You can't take an isotope of hydrogen and start splitting hydrogen atoms and not get a causal reality. But that's, they've already done that.
In these interviews, they're not going in some of all the technical stuff, which is what you wanted to talk about. They're not doing that because most people aren't even going to understand what they're talking about in the first place.
They don't either,
James.
They wouldn't be talking about it. They'd be doing it.
Yeah, Bob's reading off those paragraphs. And
to get some technical points.
Yeah.
So I've read the technical stuff here in the student's guide that's presented by your third guest you had in this topic of cold fusion. I've read the technical stuff. That's enough. Ion has quibbled with it. Get these guys on here in a live panel with Ion, and we'll have it out live. And you watch. They'll never talk to you again, James, because you embarrassed
them. That's right. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. Right.
Well, we're not being mean. They can get it, but you just got to get somewhere.
Ion, has anybody made cold fusion before, ever?
The way we describe it? No.
Is there somebody in the span of human experience that has a device that, you know, energizes the city with more output than input?
Nikolai Tesla.
Okay, so Nikola Tesla was closer than anybody else?
Closer than anybody else, that's correct.
I think Ion said that the Pentagon or the Navy, they are looking at Tesla's work to figure out how to develop something better or retrieve it. Is that true?
Yeah. They're going to use it to perfect those chemtrails.
Our recording that we offer, there's information that follows a different path than Tesla's?
Yes, that's correct. It's a more contained unit.
I think there is an assumption that this cannot be real because we're not in a lab and there's no footage of us in a lab. You've got to be in that environment to look like you're doing something.
No, Bob. You've got to be popular on 60 Minutes.
Mentor wraps up with this. Have James ask the cold fusion scientists that are getting results if the correct isotope of hydrogen, in brackets deuterium, is important.
Well, why bother? According to Ion, they're not making cold fusion. A guy that's dead did, and they stole all his stuff, so now they're just going to figure it out behind the scenes and then come out with some disinformation and say it's cold fusion. Right, Ion?
Pretty much.
Why did Nikola Tesla, why is he the one of all the people that...
Because nobody told him that he couldn't, and the ones that tried to tell him that he couldn't, he was barricaded up in the woods where he wasn't listening to their gobbledygook. He was focusing on what he could do, and he already knew what couldn't be done. He was going into the long-term, bigger picture of what's possible. We like unlimited impossibilities. You have all this gobbledygook talking about why we ain't got it. Well, if you don't know why you ain't got it, that's a degree of separation that probably won't allow it when you could pick one up at the local Walmart. All we're suggesting is redefine your focus. Redefine your focus. If you could find a way to redefine your focus, then guess what? Solutions will find you. And when solutions find you, you won't be having to take your day to consider what can't be done.
Robert from the UK says, how come Joss Dean's work has not been discussed with his big turbines fueled by cold fusion spinners?
Yeah, he's so busy doing it, he doesn't want any accolades. He's keeping his ideas to himself until they're fully developed. And he'll be able to poach an egg and may come up with something that's actually fruitful because he's not giving all this man-arrayed exposés of what he's working on.
He's doing his thing on his own where he doesn't have anybody bugging him. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly correct.
So there's an advantage to that?
Yeah.
Is China really doing cold fusion? Are they closer to what we say in our recording?
Well, especially after they heard the recording, yeah.